This episode is brought to you in part by Swim. Here's the thing about wishlist apps. Most of them just sit there. A customer saves a product, and then nothing happens. Swim actually activates that data. When someone wishlists a product, you could trigger price drop or back in stock alerts and feed that intent directly into Klaviyo or your CRM. You're not guessing what people want because they've told you. Plus, customers can share wishlists for gifts, and your team can view them to offer personalized service online or in-store. And unlike cart abandonment, wishlist data is permission-based. These are people raising their hand saying, hey, I want this, just not right now. Swim's been around for over a decade. It powers 45,000 stores and installs in about 5 minutes. You could try it for free today at getswim.com/Kurt. That's getswym.com/Kurt.
Like, she's had a little growth spurt. It's like, okay, cool.
It's also exciting, right? It's like you're growing up. This is validation of who you are. You know, and we want this positive experience for everybody. And so today on the unofficial Shopify podcast, we are joined by Dana Roberts and Dr. Monica Williams from Scarlet by Reddrop, a business that, from what I've heard so far, sounds like it, you know, it was an idea 10 years in the making before they said, you know what, let's try this. And then, you know, in researching it, I found just last year they received a $1 million grant presented by Pharrell Williams, of all people. Is this true?
This is true, Kurt.
That is quite incredible. So, okay. All right. We're doing this. We're recording. We're going. Tell me, share with me, Scarlet by Reddrop, what do you sell?
We sell period products and education for school-age girls.
Why is it important? Let's just get it out of the way now.
Well, it's important because, I mean, honestly, girls deserve a positive experience as their body is changing, you know, as people say growing up, but as their body is doing what it's absolutely supposed to do, they deserve products, you know, they deserve a period positive experience. And that includes products that are made for them. That includes desexualized education. That includes education that they can relate to. That includes support for their community, their caretakers, their teachers, their school nurses, their grandparents, their dads. You know, it includes all of it. And it's just really, really important.
Well, it's important because it doesn't exist.
A simple reminder that this is something that potentially affects, or our target market is, half of the population.
Exactly. Right?
So you are, the two of you as a pair of co-founders, are a fifth grade teacher and a physician. How did you meet? How did this happen? You said it was earlier, you know, in our pre-interview, you said, hey, you heard about you came up with the idea 10 years prior to ever actually doing anything with it.
Well, yeah, I had a fifth grade girls class. I was teaching in a single gender environment. And, you know, I had girls that were starting their periods with me that just were grossly unprepared. And Monica is I like to call her a serial entrepreneur. And so she was, you know, on her first business at the time. And, I was going over, Monica and I are God sisters. I was going over to help her pack orders, which is what we do in our family when we need help, we call people. And so I was over there, you know, packing orders, and I was like, hey, I got an idea. The look that she gave me was like, can you just pack orders, please? Like, like, what are you talking about?
She's like, that's great. Not now.
I mean, but what it does say, and I think Monica could probably say this better than I can, you know, her daughter, my niece, was a baby, you know, and so she couldn't really correlate the idea of her little girl starting her period at that time because she was a baby.
You know, when my wife had that conversation with me about our daughter, I was like, but that's my baby. I don't understand how this could be, right? I absolutely, as a parent, I understand how that mental disconnect occurred Monica, I believe you were selling pacifiers at the time. And so you're like, all right, that's great, but not now. And then time goes by. At what point did you realize, wait a second, Dana was right about this?
Yeah, I mean, it starts when they start to get in the car, and you may be experiencing this now, Kurt, and it's like, what gym team got in the car with me? Like, whoa, what is happening?
Yeah, and our older kids are teen boys, and there was a time where, like, we had cracked the whip on, like, I don't think you understand how important deodorant and soap use is, gentlemen.
Yeah, and it happens with girls, too. So I only have one girl, and I was just like, and I couldn't believe it. This little person gets in. It's like,
yep,
the football team come in here. What's happening? So about that point, it was definitely starting to cross my mind about she was actually going to grow up, because to your point, it's like they started this little thing. And even when I walked through Target, and like there's little clothes, and even like the 6T, I'm like, she's never going to be that big. This is impossible. And then it's like, it happens.
At that point, you reach back out to Dana?
Yep.
Or like, hey.
I called Dana, and per the usual, she didn't answer her phone. So I kept calling.
Wow. She probably called me during the day, and I was actually working, because she's a serial entrepreneur. Yeah, she could just, call anytime. But by that time, I was an administrator, so I was probably helping children. That's what it's I was doing.
True. It's true. He wasn't just ghosting me, but it took a few calls, and then we had the conversation. And I will say one other thing that really helped too. Like I said, she's my god sister. She's my husband's sister, and we had the first conversation. We are at his mother's house, and I'll never forget. We're sitting like on this kind of old little couch or whatever, and he tells the story of how his middle daughter started her period with him. Mm-hmm. and they were at a zoo or a park
little
or something
playground.
And she wore a little white capris, a little yellow top. She came home and she went upstairs, she came back down, she's like, Dad, did I sit in some chocolate or something? And he was like, oh no. And so he called his sisters, he called his mom, they came, they swooped in and took her to the store and had the talk. But like, he was a single dad at the time and didn't have the tools to have that conversation. And so that really struck me too, that this was like, it was just such a big potential problem that we could really help solve and make things better for so many people. And so that was really the follow-up that set me like, okay, this is what we need to do. We at least need to, and I think what's kicked this off is, we need to test this idea and see if people agree with us and will trade their money for this idea.
So how do you, or well, when is this? Is this like 2021, I believe?
No, this is like 2016.
Okay, a while ago. All right.
Yeah.
So in the before times, pre-pandemic, how do you validate the idea?
So like I said, this is my third business. So I had and have had for many years a really good supply chain ties in China. And so I reached out to people that I knew and got just started, frankly, with samples of things that I knew we could get in bulk, like that wouldn't cost us a bunch of money. And we could start out with just like, there's always EOM basic things. We could stick a sticker on there and try selling it hand to hand, have conversations with people. What would you pay for this? What would you like in this? That was, for me, that's how we validate anything, is like, start with something that doesn't cost you, like, kind of like, I guess, in with web stuff, it's like your MVP. Start with some sort of MVP. And
minimum viable product.
Yes, yeah, sorry. Minimum viable product. And see what people say, how much they will pay for it, how you can sell it. Like my second business, I started out, I screwed it up because I started out hand to hand and tried to move it to a web product. And the customers at that time were barbers. They weren't going to buy stuff on the web. So, like we may start hand to hand, but how do we build a really basic, simple website and see, will people buy this and order it? Because if you're used to going in the store, will you wait for it to get to you, even though you don't know what it looks like? So like all those kinds of like thought processes around something that we're really trying to educate people around.
At what point does this end up on a Shopify store?
Early, because it, like, even though that was, so the first Shopify store was probably 20, I think that was 2018. Like, it took a couple years to get, like, to test a bunch of samples and get to the point where we had something to put in on a store. And that was 2018. And it was, you know, Shopify at that time was the only platform. That's not true. There was WooCommerce. There was, like, other platforms. But there weren't any that...
Ew.
That was any time I hear a non-Shopify platform get mentioned, that happened. There's something wrong with my microphone. I don't know why it does it. Like, watch this. WooCommerce.
Ew.
Yeah, I don't know why. I'll get it fixed eventually. Don't worry about it.
Sorry. So there were other platforms, but none of them were any good. Shopify, since Shopify showed up on the site, on the scene, has been, the best product for me to start at home and try and build something that is scalable.
Initially, you have to find the products, go through the samples, but you have an unfair advantage here. You have experience, you know, and you have a network, you have connections to suppliers in China, which, awesome, you know, that you're not trying to figure that out for the first time, in addition to figuring out, you know, the product, the business, product market fit, et cetera. Well, okay, as you're validating it, what's the point where you went, this will work? Like, absolutely, you know, this is valid. This is what we want.
I mean, it would be when people exchanged money for it.
No, because early on, what we thought we were selling, Kurt, wasn't what we were selling. We thought we were selling something like price and convenience. And like, to me, it's easy. I can click a few buttons, and our pricing was very fair in the, like, when we were testing, and it'll show up on my doorstep. And so we had some orders that happened that way, but what we did that I think was really smart early on was we had this little simple email that went out after every order that said, you know, this is from Monica and Dana. We're so happy you bought this from us. We know that there's 24 feet of aisle in Walmart where you can go get this really easy and probably for less money. Why did you pick us? Can we call and ask you why? And 90% of,
oh, that's so 90% smart.
Of people said yes. Like, it was one of those like simple texts. Like, it looked like I literally dashed this out to them personally. And 90% of people said yes. And we had one guy on the team that did actually call. And what we learned is that people were really intrigued by the size and the preparation. And so when we started changing our messaging to what we learned that people were actually buying, we saw some acceleration. And so for me, this, like, the scalability was, am I going to be able to put $1 in and get, you know, multiples of that dollar out? And we gotten some of that with like the size and preparation, but really, frankly, wasn't at a scalable point. We finally hit on some messaging that was like, oh shit, I can put in as much money and like get some of this back. And that was the moment for me.
It sounds like you're describing return on ad spend. Yeah. Is that, and if this was, especially if this was pre-pandemic, you know, much easier to advertise on Meta then.
Absolutely.
Than now. Was that how we were acquiring those initial customers, is Facebook, yes, Instagram ads?
And we did, at the time, the way we did it was, you've heard of Smart Marketer?
Absolutely. A Smart Marketer. Molly Pittman, Ezra Firestone.
Yeah. So we did their like train my traffic person course. Like, I and another person did it at the time. And so we did it ourselves. And I'm not even on social media. So getting in the back end and doing it was really interesting. Like, especially from kind of a this isn't my life kind of perspective. And we did all of that ourselves. So that was really, at the time, really exciting. And then when we got to scale, we hired someone, and they like, at that point, shot it to the moon. Cause like, we, like, you can tinker. And if you're really not about that life, you're not going to get the results. So working with people who knew all the, like, the tricks and all that, and they were able to just kind of do a little bit of something, going from that zero to one is so exciting. Like, you know, you're sitting at your computer and it's like, shit, like, what's it going to be today? What's the number going to be today? And we text each other. It was like, it was, those early days were, to your point, before the Meta changes and ROAS was strong. It was really exciting.
Here's some customer service emails you don't want to wake up to. I was drunk. This was a gift, but we broke up. Wrong color, wrong size, wrong me. Sound familiar? With Cleverific, you don't have to deal with these anymore. Cleverific gives your customers a self-service portal to edit their own orders. No emails, no back and forth, just simple fixes. Fewer support tickets, faster fulfillment, and happier customers. Peter Manning New York slashed their order support request by 99%. You can too. Get 50% off the Cleverific Pro plan, just $49 a month, exclusively for the unofficial Shopify podcast listeners. Go to cleverific.com/unofficial and use promo code KURT50. Fix the problem before it's a problem. That's Cleverific. We have the idea that we have to wait 10 years. Now we have to we got to find the inventory. We got to validate it. And then you take what they lovingly call TMTP, train my traffic person. Hanging out with Ezra and Molly enough, I've heard TMTP so many times. And so you do that. Yeah. That, okay, now you start messing with Facebook ads and you're doing it profitably where like the ROAS is, 2X or better or whatever. Hire out to an agency to scale it. How quickly do we grow? Where do we go? Can I hit me with some numbers?
So like once we handed off to an agency, we got to like 300K that first year, which for me, this was being my first business.
For year one, that's great.
Yeah, no, it was incredible. Like, so that was an overseas agency. Like they were really good, but they're like, the other side of this, like we talked about, is like this is also a very sensitive moment. And you're experiencing that yourself. And so culturally, it wasn't really a fit. The way that they talk and the way that they think about these things is very different than Americans. And so we got that to a certain point, and then we're like, okay, we need to change and either try this ourselves or try a domestic agency. And now if I'm being honest with you, Kurt, that completely fucked us up because like we could not get an agency that would scale in the same way. And now, of course, to your point, hindsight's 2020. Getting from zero to one is one thing, but getting from one to something else is much harder. And so we didn't know that. We expected there to be this continuous hockey stick, if you will. And so we struggled for a good year with agencies and the messaging. And it like we went through so many iterations in that messy, very, very messy middle. Like we're kind of in a messy middle right now, but that was a very, very messy middle where we were struggling with packaging. We're struggling with name. We're struggling with what's the creative? How do we scale this now with this messaging? And just, it got really messy.
Well, how'd you get out of it? I mean, just like work through each problem. It sounded like, it's a series of things as you scale, you realize like, okay, well, here's the next thing we got to do. And then, maybe you're trying to do everything all at once. That's often my problem, right? Like, I'm like, all right, I got 10 things I need to do to go forward. I know what I have to do. Let's attempt to do 8 all at the same time. Of course, it doesn't work.
No, it's so you're so right. Our CFO is very much like you. He's our third co-founder. He's generally not acknowledged on these things, but we do have a third co-founder, Jared Shaw, because he always says that somehow he gets left out of being a co-founder. So Jared Shaw is our third co-founder.
Oh, poor Jared. Very much shout out to Jared, co-founder.
Shout out to Jared Shaw.
But he is always trying to do all the things at once, Kurt. So like we did some more surveying, like what's the right price? One of the challenges I think we had, our first kit had way too many, had a lot more pads than they have now. So we were worried, we were trying to get to lifetime value and repeat purchase. So if you give people like a month and a half of pads or 2.5 months worth of pads, when are they going to come back? They're going to run out and then they're just going to end up at the store. So we're trying to figure this out. So we're going to downsize. We're going to make our packaging more girl friendly because the first packaging was pretty sterile. It was nice, but it was pretty sterile. And then we wanted to adjust the price. We asked people, how much do you think you should pay for this? We know the national average is $16.50 a month. Or is this like for a first period kit or a period kit with everything in it? Is there how much price sensitivity is there? Does it have to be $16.50? Can it be $30? So we did all this like work on what people really wanted. And we made changes and we did a lot at once. And so like our AOV fell, their iOS changes. So customer acquisition costs went up.
iOS 14.5. That change happened, caught us all. They told us we knew it was coming. And then, the actual results of it seemingly caught us all off guard at that time. Certainly you weren't alone.
Yeah, no, but like, but the other side of this too, Kurt, is we are unfunded. Like, we won that $1 million mm-hmm. from Pharrell last year. That was our first funding. So everything we did had to create money. And so when all these changes happened, it was that's why I'm saying it was so stressful, because we knew that we were making these changes based on data, but the results were not meeting out in a way that allowed us to grow this business. And it's like, are we going to lose this business because we just don't have enough money and we don't have the access to the capital to grow this in a traditional way? It was tough.
So of the expenses, like, it sounds like it's everything adding up as you realize where it has to go. And it's exciting and frustrating because you're like, hey, we absolutely have seen this work. We know it can work. And we're just trying to make it work better than it does currently. But then you run into this issue of, all right, I got to spend money to make money. That's my scenario. Of those things, what was the biggest expense? What was the one that kept you awake at night?
I think the thing that kept me awake, and I'd love to hear Dana's answer during this period of time, is we at this point now we've launched on Amazon, and Amazon was a pretty significant channel of business for us. Like, you know, when you get like some good marketing churn going, is that another ooh? Do I get a thing after that?
Well, for Amazon, you know what? Why not?
Ew.
They don't need any more of my money at this point.
All right. So Amazon is a significant channel of business for us. And when we made the changes, we didn't know that we were going to have to make complete changes on Amazon. So we ordered a specific amount of it, like what we could afford. And then for us to be able to continue to sell on Amazon, essentially, we had to double that. So like half the inventory went out the door to Amazon. We ran out of inventory. Like we couldn't get, it was, God, oh my God, you're making me relive this. What was your question?
Well, all right. So like you needed cash, you know, you had to feed the beast. And so what was the thing that kept you up at night? Like what specifically of these many issues at the time?
For me, it was bad hires. It was a marketing agency that wasn't working in our best interest. And when I say in our best interest, nothing malicious, right? It just wasn't working.
Just the fit wasn't
right.
There.
It wasn't a good fit. And I will say too, we had a hire that wasn't a good fit that was, working with marketing. And so it was just a really hard time because you're looking at it from a lens like this should really be working. Like this does not make sense that this is this hard and it's not working when you feel like you have like some real experts in the room. And to be honest, we're not the experts, right? So we're hiring what our kind of advisors and mentors have told us to do, like get you some good experts, like do this, do that. And it's not working. And I think that is what kept me up at night, because I realized that it was a cycle and it was just continuing. And we had to really we had to win that $1 million because we needed to make a complete shift in our agency, in our overall approach in marketing. And we were able to do that with that money.
So, all right, tell me about that. You were awarded $1 million by Pharrell Williams. Is it like, you know, epic Grammy Award winning artist Pharrell Williams, Billboard chart topper, happy gentleman, like that Pharrell Williams. How does that happen? No one has ever handed me a novelty check before, let alone an A-list celebrity.
So he has every year a competition called the Black Ambition Prize, and it's a pitch contest. It's in many ways, it's a 9-month interview process. So you start out like with most pitch contests, there's a application and you submit a video and you get to the next stage and there's another application. There's a cohort. And then there's several rounds of virtual pitch competitions to get to the finals. And then there are 10 finalists that go to do it in person for our year. Like, I know there are COVID years where they did it virtually, but we were able to go in person. Our year was in New York. And ultimately, 8 people were selected to go on stage, and you have 3 minutes to win $1 million.
High stakes.
Yo, it's crazy.
If I were in a scenario like that, I would do my best and probably remember none of it. Like 100%, I just black out from the pressure. You know, similar situations after the fact. I'm like, I hope that went well because I don't remember it.
To Dana's point, we really needed to win. But there were like, there are 8-7 other really good businesses, really impactful businesses, other individuals who are making tremendous changes in this world. And like you, through this process, you really bond with them and you want everyone to win. Is it like, so everyone does win something. Don't get me wrong. Everyone, like the, I think the smallest check to that group is $50,000. That's 50. I think there was 100 that year. It was 250 and then a million. So he gave away, but people won $3.7 million that day.
Yeah.
So it's a big, very expensive room. But to your point, that 3 minutes I had drilled and drilled and drilled with advisors, with Jared, shout out to Jared again. They had a pitch coach, couple pitch coaches. Like there's a lot of work that goes into that to really distilling your story down into 3 minutes. You do have slides, which is great. And if I'm being honest, not to take away from this moment, Kirk, but the only way that we have gotten money in this company to this date is pitch contest. So I'm not saying I'm great at the pressure.
This is your first pitch contest?
No, this was not our first pitch contest.
We've had people on who've like, you know, been on Shark Tank and, you know, gotten the deal or not gotten the deal. I don't know that I've ever had someone who's like, we did multiple pitch contests and then won multiple and then like won a grand prize. That's quite incredible. Just extremely unusual.
Well, I'll say, I'm not trying to highlight the fact that minority founders do not get funding generally. But for us, that's the only way that we've gotten it. We've been awarded, I want to say almost 1.5 in pitch contests. Yeah.
I mean, but I know Monica, I don't have a problem with highlighting it. Like, I mean, literally at that point, it was literally, I don't know where our company would be. We definitely, I think, would be alive. Don't get me wrong, but it would be a very different circumstance right now. And so when you, especially like when you look at this business and like Monica said, the 8 or 7 other businesses that we were competing against all were trying to be, are being impactful in this world. Right. And so when you look at it from our lens, it's like, my gosh, like it shouldn't be this hard to sell like an investment into literally humans, like into girls. Like they deserve, you know, this non-traumatic experience. They deserve a very positive experience. And to keep like pushing that message and kind of it falling on deaf ears was really it started to sometimes, and I can only imagine for Monica because she is the pitch person on our team, is like it really just impacts your psyche sometimes.
Yeah, how could it not? It's hard not to internalize that stuff, especially, you know, as an entrepreneur, as a business owner, you know, you as a founder, it very much becomes part of your identity. And so, you know, what the business goes through reflects on you and your headspace, truly. So one of the things that's so tough about marketing your product that is the end user is children. And so that's a difficult target, a difficult market to target to because they can't make purchases directly. They don't have credit cards. And it's weird to, there's all kinds of regulation around that kind of advertising. And so realistically, you actually are advertising to their parents would be, you know, my suspicion. And, you know, you talked about like you got to change agencies, you know, get the marketing messaging right. You know, tell me about that marketing where, you know, what's the hard part about marketing period products to tweens without talking to them directly?
I think that it's actually not as hard because kind of like you were saying, your wife said that she remembers her first period experience. A first period especially, but those early periods are core memories. And so we really appeal to moms in that take them back to that moment. I think the biggest challenge is that ultimately, every woman that if they're women in your office, your wife, all the women you see started with products that didn't fit her and she survived. So it is the challenge we have is convincing them that your experience wasn't great And now you have to, I have to remind you that your experience wasn't great and that there's a product that's worth investing in early because you want this here when, like, when the next period comes or when their first period comes, whatever, to prevent this. And as opposed to you survive, she'll be okay too. Like, that's, to me, that's the hardest navigation for us.
It's really impacting the psyche of moms, really, you know, saying like, you know, your story about your wife, like we've heard that story kind of over and over again, where a mom makes a conscious decision who had a traumatic or not the ideal experience to ensure that her daughter's experience was going to be completely different. And so it's usually on that spectrum, right? It's usually, I'm going to make sure my daughter has a completely different experience, or I'm going to bury my head in the sand. And then unfortunately, that baby's going to end up having the same experience that mom had. And so I think it's just really talking to moms. Like I've had so many conversations with women who will say, well, they really don't need this. And I'm like, yeah, they do. And guess what? I wish I could have given it to you, but I just, you know, we weren't around then, but they actually, you deserved it. But now we're going to make sure that they get it. And so it's just really impacting their psyche, because I think there has been a perpetual cycle of like, you just use what you have. Like, you don't demand any excellence. You don't demand anything different. You just have to take what was given. And that's changing a whole mindset.
Here's a word from our sponsor, Zipify. Hey, the holidays are over. Traffic's down, ad costs are still up, and you're staring at Q1 wondering how to keep momentum going. Here's the move. Stop leaving money on the table with every order. One-click upsell automatically increases average order value by up to 30% with AI-powered upsells across your entire customer funnel. Launch pre-purchase and post-purchase upsells for every product in your store in one click. Customers get personalized offers and spend more as a result. Unlike other apps, you only pay for those results, not views. It takes under 2 minutes to set up, and it starts working immediately. Q1 doesn't have to be a slump. Make every order count while you rebuild traffic. Go to zipify.com/Kurt for your 30-day free trial. That's zipify.com/KURT. And let's start the year profitable. How do you do it without shaming the moms? I would imagine like that's the tightrope you're walking here. It's like, you know, agitate the pain by like leveraging this experience, but then do it without creating shame on, you know, somebody's decision or experience.
We really do it as like a big sister voice. And so it's kind of how would you have liked to have a like an assistant in this moment. So we try to insert ourselves as the assistant, but in a way that's relatable and not preachy and not, we're educated, but we're not doctory. It's like, we really try to walk that line with being a big sister and having the right tone.
I like that. And I like that you've got that such a clear way to describe tone of voice, big sister. That immediately makes life much easier or any kind of copyrighted marketing exercise when you have that, like those clear definitions of how it is supposed to sound. You had what, there was a product on your site, on your Shopify store that I thought was very clever. What was it? Oh, the bathroom pass. Tell me about the bathroom pass.
When I was a teacher, we had a hand signal. We decided on a signal, and the girls gave me the signal, and they, you know, walked out and did what they needed to do. We didn't even have to have a conversation about it. But you know, that's not always the case, right? So the bathroom pass is literally, you know, a pass where they can hand off to their teacher or, you know, whoever, their coach, their counselor, whoever. And it has some terms and conditions on the back, like, this is what I'm using this for. You know, I'm not going to abuse this, you know, whatever the case may be. And it just really helps alleviate a real kind of sometimes uncomfortable conversation. We get a lot of feedback on Facebook about the bathroom pass, about like, hey, this is great. My daughter was able to use this with her male teacher. It made her feel, you know, so much more comfortable. And to be honest, I wish it wasn't even a thing. You know, I wish we didn't even have to have this. Like, I wish that this was so normalized and we felt so empowered to have the conversation that it's just, hey, I'm going to the bathroom. I mean, and let me just say this, because I get a lot of pushback on this from comments that I don't feel like girls should have to justify why they have to go to the bathroom. Let me be clear.
100%.
Okay. We get a lot of feedback on it. A lot. Like, but the spirit and the intention behind the pass is literally to help make, you know, the girl more comfortable to say, I need some support and I need to go to the bathroom. And that's it.
Just a simple solution to a societal problem. You know, I saw it, immediately understood the purpose, use case, et cetera. And I thought it was very clever, even if it's not, you know, the core product, but it speaks to it. So I want to talk about the rebrand. You, this year, changed names from Red Drop to Scarlet. Tell me about it.
That was honestly really pushed by Ulta. So we did the Ulta Music Accelerator. And part of that, it's a 3-month process where you get retail ready, if you will. And the beautiful thing that Ulta does, or thing that Ulta does very beautifully, is they fold you in with their leadership in a very authentic and conversational way. And so by the end, you're having conversations with this VP, maybe not the president, she's really busy, but like really high up people in retail who have been in cosmetics and understand buyer behavior in that space way better than you can. And they're comfortable enough to say, look, this is polarizing. And Red Drop, kind of going back to what will people trade their money for? In the beginning, if I'm being honest, I waited tables for the first money that we put into putting products together, bringing products to the U.S. We didn't have money to work with a real branding agency. Red Drop was something, frankly, a guy that is now a big brander who was waiting tables with me at the time was like, hey, let's just try this. Let's be very on the nose. Like, it was meant to be very intentional because your period isn't a flower. It isn't fun and blossomy. It's a thing that's like, it can be uncomfortable. It can be very messy. And we felt like, let's just be more in the face about it. Ulta didn't like that. So they're like, hey, look, this is too polarizing. We need you to work with our branding agency to come up with some other names. And they, over the course of, I'd say it was 6 weeks, because from the time that the Ulta Accelerator ended to the time that we had to have product in DC was a little more than 90 days. So the first 4 to 6 weeks were spent on this naming exercise with their branding agency. And then we did the legal searches and we had to build the packaging really, really quickly. If I'm being like, I love Scarlet. It feels like Red Drop smoothed out for the people. We didn't come up with that. The branding agency came up with it. It felt like it was the most, like the thing that had the most continuity from where we started. But the pace at which we had to proceed from that initiative, Kurt, was unbelievable. Like, frankly, what we did is impossible. And I'm like, we've done a lot of impossible shit. And I'm really proud of that. That is something I'm super proud of. But it was really hard. And it was, I would say also internally, and Dana, I'd love to hear your opinion about this. I know internally for some of us, we had gotten so far with Red Drop. We won that $1 million with Red Drop. So it's kind of like, what's wrong with Red Drop? So there was like, part of this was like us, like it being our baby in some ways. And part of it was, okay, bad branding costs money, but like at this stage, how do we know how much money it costs us? So it was there was a lot that went on with that.
It still is a little, I mean, you know, we're officially Scarlet by Red Drop. Let me say that for the people. It, you know, so there, you know, Red Drop is still a little there, but it was hard because like Monica said, like we had literally just won $1 million as Red Drop. And it's really hard for you to have like an entity, to be honest, come in and tell you like you're, and they didn't say it in this way, right? But it's like, you're not going to be successful if you don't do this. Like, and you're like,
no, I 100% I get it. I mean, they're basically like saying, if I was like, hey, you know, Dana, Monica, I think you guys should change your names. You know, it'll just work better. You could be Danielle and, I don't know, Mona. That'll be better. You'd be like, get out of here, you know?
Yeah, and because in particular, that year, 2024, was a very hard year. And so it's like when you're on top of that, you know, you get this one big win and then they come back and they're like, hey, but by the way, if you want to play on the playground, you got to change your name. And part of me was like, F that. Like, I don't care. Like, you know, I mean, and I really had to take my emotions and, you know, out of it and just try to ride the wave and trust the process. Because it was really hard.
At the same time, you know, they're saying essentially painting it a little more extreme, they're holding you hostage in that they're saying, look, like currently you're in 380 Ulta stores. That is phenomenal, right? My office is in a mall. I can walk to Ulta and find your product right now. And that's incredible for a small business to get that kind of retail distribution. So they're saying like, look, you're going to change the name if you want to be in those 380 stores. Now that it's happened, you know, you've made the name change, you're in the stores, worth it?
Oh, yeah. I love Scarlet by Red Drop. I do love it. I think we were very thoughtful when, you know, presented with the options that they gave us, that we really wanted to find the option, you know, the best out of those options to signify who we are, what we do, and what's important to us. And I also believe, like, those names that they offered us came from girls, came from, you know, focus groups. And so I love the fact that we selected something that they loved, that they resonated with, you know, and that's really important to both of us, you know. And so I love it now, especially with the packaging. I do. It was a little hard in the beginning. So,
you know, and I also accept their advice and experience. They certainly have more, you know, experience in branding products than any of us do combined. So, you know, sometimes you just have to go, yeah, they probably know what they're talking about.
Yeah.
And I just don't have the experience to appreciate it.
Basically that.
Yeah. You know, having some humility and not letting your ego get in the way of good advice, even if it doesn't make sense, but you know it's coming from a good place. Okay, you know, take the chance on it. And in this case, you did, and it worked out. Plus, you know, the name doesn't change your mission. Empower, like what... the name could be whatever. It could be like, you know, Barney's period pads. The mission is still, oh man, Mattel is going to be mad at me for that. The mission is going to be empower girls, normalize periods, and desexualize puberty. Fabulous, right? The name doesn't change it. So from here, where do you go? You know, what's next? What's coming in 2026 for Scarlet by Red Drop?
We obviously, more retail distribution will be great for us, because to get to really accomplish our mission, we need to have access to more girls and families. So hopefully some retail expansion. We have some interesting product expansion ideas. This year, we are able to add tampons and menstrual cups and period swimwear, which is fantastic. We have some other product line additions coming. And those would be the main things. I mean, like, we're finally able to sell on TikTok, so that's kind of exciting. That took a lot.
Yeah, so of your, like, obviously you've got the meta sales channel going, you're selling on Amazon, now you got TikTok shop going. Any other unexpected sales channels or marketing channels that are working out for you?
Yeah, so we just got accepted into this really interesting like vending machine concepts. You know, you go to those big airports, there's like vending machines for like Kylie Beauty and AG1. Like, you see them all, CVS, they all have these kind of like...
Okay, I just bought cake out of a vending machine at an airport. So absolutely, I will buy cake from a vending machine again.
Absolutely. And so I think I love the idea of a vending machine. And so we got accepted to six in 2026. And so just providing access to girls and moms on the go with some like small travel options, we're excited about.
You've got some, certainly every Shopify store has apps installed you've got 20 to 40. Of those many apps and all their important features, do you have a favorite? Like, I see you've got a store locator going. Obviously, you know, that's important. What's your favorite app?
Klaviyo.
Klaviyo. Excellent. Yeah, definitely put that in the need to have category.
I love Klaviyo. They're so good.
Of your Shopify metrics, your KPIs, key performance indicators, I bet there's one that you obsess over more than others. What is it?
It's funny. I'm pulling up. We have a scorecard. Let me see.
Ooh.
New customer AOV. Well, between new customer AOV and new customer CAC.
And then I assume this is so we could stay on top of our cash flow, you know, understand our contribution margin, make sure we're acquiring customers profitably.
Yes.
If you were to go back to the beginning, you know, hindsight's 2020, we have our time machine. It's finally happened. What's the one piece of advice that you would give yourself?
It's funny, Kurt, because I just had this conversation with Jared yesterday, and we are trying to get some significant funding now so we can really grow. And we're getting some advice from an investment banker. It's funny because you just said, like, you know, have the humility to listen to this advice. They probably know more than you do, and this is coming from a good place. And some of the advice we're getting is just so counterintuitive to everything that we have done to survive to this point. Like, we need to reduce our channels. And I get it. I understand why an investor would say that. But our wide channel expansion has helped us survive, because if Facebook gets shut down today, we still are making money on, like, you know, three other platforms or four other ways to make money. So it's really helped us to survive. But their point is that it has stretched our resources very thin. Like, we could have a buy over here, a wholesale buy of, you know, 30,000 units, and we only bought 40,000. We thought they would last for 2 months, and now we're out. So, like, they're right, but it's difficult to accept. So I say all that to say that the piece of advice I give myself today, that if I were starting over, is don't start this without significant resources. It is really, really hard in this day and age. Like, it's hard to raise money, but it's even harder to raise money in this environment of traction and bootstrapping. So I wish that we hadn't had to bootstrap for as long as we had to bootstrap.
Interesting. So you would seek VC funding earlier, or seek grants earlier, like our competition winnings?
I would seek angel and competition winnings earlier.
Yeah. It's like, by the time you realize you need it, you probably needed to go try to find it, you know, a month prior. Good point. Okay. And, you know, I'm going to send the link to your site to my wife and be like, hey, you know, check this out. Order something for our daughter. Remind me, what is that site that I should send her?
It's tryscarlet.com. And Kurt, I will happily send you and send your wife and your 8-year-old some goodies. You'll have to order. I'm so happy you had us on here. This has been super exciting. I've been listening to you for years, like I told you in the pre-interview, and this is a super watershed moment for us. So thank you so much.
I am so glad. I have goosebumps. You made my day.
Oh, you made my day. So thank you so much.
Monica Williams, Dana Roberts, Scarlett, thank you. Hey, before you go, I was hoping you would check out our new app, Promo Party Pro. It is what I want to be the single best, easiest way to run a free gift with purchase promo on Shopify. We just put it live in the App Store. We've got less than 50 users. We want your feedback. So if you need to run a free gift with purchase promo in the near future, install it, try it. There's a live chat. I check that all the time. And so if you have any issues at all, you know, or any suggestions on how we can make it even easier to use, let us know. We're happy to help. If you want to try it, search Promo Party in the App Store. Promo Party Pro is the app. Give it a shot. It's got a free trial. Thanks.